This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
When I thought about what I'm going to present at the symposium, I thought about like how many talks are before me. There were like about 13 of them. And I thought, well, there is always advantage and disadvantage to be the last speaker on a day-long symposium. So when I looked at all this, Lucy's impact on in our field, I felt like there was nothing left to me, for me. So, but I thought like this is gonna be probably a good thing because I think there is one more thing left. So we've been talking about Lucy's impact on our understanding of human origins. But there was something that I really wanted to talk about, which is Lucy's impact on the development of African paleosciences, which is as important as the impact that Lucy had on our knowledge of human origins. So in a lot of ways, all these fantastic talks that you've heard this morning and the afternoon, they really highlight the impact that Lucy had, really, on various aspects of what we want to understand about our evolutionary history, from early hominin paleobiology to early hominin habitats to early hominin diet and so forth, right? You've heard a lot about her impact in those areas, but you've also read a lot about those impacts in various scientific publications by the speakers today and also others. But I can tell you that the one publication you will never see is Lucy's impact on the development of African paleosciences. So in a lot of ways, I like to talk about that because it's as significant as the impact that we're talking about from the paleobiology, paleoecology, and dietary understanding that we have. So even though my title says Advances in Science into Human Origins, you've already heard a lot from that. So I'm going to concentrate on the second part, which is the development of African paleosciences. The reason why I wanted to talk about this is because not a whole lot of people know how much Lucy had impact on the development of paleosciences and the development of African scholars, especially in Ethiopia. Okay? Because she was found in Ethiopia and she had tremendous impact on how not only Ethiopians thought about Lucy, but also how the government thought about Lucy and how it thought about the paleosciences in the country. So what I would like to do is, what are the key elements that we can highlight when we think about scientific impact, right? You've heard like so many things, and I would like to highlight that Lucy was really impactful, particularly how we understood the origin of bipedality. And you've heard about all these fabulous discoveries from South Africa as early as 1924. But hominins, earliest hominins, were not older than 2 million years. So when Don and his team found that knee joint, it pushed that record all the way to 3.2 million years ago, right? So that was totally unexpected. Nobody thought that early hominins were going to be as old as 3 million years. So that was like a new revelation that changed everything that we thought about the origin of bipedality. Now we know that they were much older bipeds from even 6 million years ago, right? But that moment in the 1970s, our knowledge of the earliest bipedality was based on what was being discovered from South Africa. So I think that is one of the impacts that I can really highlight when I talk about Lucy. The second one is the beginning of the human lineage itself, which was also understood based on the discoveries from South Africa, which were not older than 2 million years again, right? But now our lineage is really ancient because Lucy told us it's as old as 3.4, 3.2 million years ago. Even though now we know our lineage is actually older, going back to 6 or 7 million years ago. But in general, in addition to all these new ideas that we've learned from Lucy about early hominin paleobiology, diet, paleoecology, all of these combined really come to these two main points that really highlight the significance of Lucy. And this has been mentioned so many times by all the fabulous speakers before me. And one of the major impacts of Lucy's discovery was that it encouraged so many scientists to go out and survey and explore for more fossils like Lucy. Not only fossils like Lucy, but also even older fossils like Lucy. So you can imagine what that atmosphere can create in the minds of scientists. And all of a sudden, it was not just about looking for these fossils. It was also competition to find the earliest human ancestor, competition to do like something that other scientists haven't done. So that competition was really healthy in some ways, but not always, I can tell you. But the healthy competition is what really resulted in the discovery of so many sites that you've seen in a lot of slides today, particularly when you look at that map of Africa, which I will show you in a moment. A lot of the sites were actually found, especially the ones in Eastern Africa, were found after the discovery of Lucy. So that's something that I can highlight in terms of the Lucy's impact on our origins science. She also brought tremendous public interest in human origins. And that is to say that the work that Don has done, particularly publicizing, sharing all of the information about Lucy with the general public all over the world. Just imagine how much interest that brought to people's interest in understanding our evolutionary research. So this is something that I can highlight as part of the scientific impact. Now, to the main part of my talk, which is what was her impact on African paleosciences. Now, this is not a data easy to collect together and put like, you know, like what was her impact on paleoecology? What was her impact on our understanding of diet? This is really difficult because what are the things that you want to connect to actually see what her impact was? So you have to really think about, go back in time to the 1970s and think about, okay, what was going on in the 1970s, particularly in terms of paleosciences in Africa, right? And think about who are these scientists who are doing all of this research, right? So you've seen these photos so many times today, but what I really want to stress is that when Lucy was found, there was no infrastructure or laboratory facility in Ethiopia. So all of these fossils that you're seeing on this slide, they were found in the mid-70s, including 333, the first family, Lucy, and so many other specimens. And Don had no choice but export all these fossils to the United States because there was no lab in Ethiopia at the National Museum to do the research where the fossils were found, right? And you can clearly see that the reason why they were exported to the United States was because Don and his colleagues had to study these fossils, but they did not have the necessary laboratory to do the research. So they had to export them to the United States. But what happened upon their return back to Ethiopia is there is still no lab. Where are all these fossil hominids going to be stored? There's no place, right? But it kind of triggered interest in the government and some scientists to actually think about this, and well, we got to do something. And this is when they went back, I think it's 81-ish? Yeah. 80, yeah. So this is when people started thinking about we got to do something. And interestingly, what they decided was, okay, maybe this is because we don't have good antiquities law. So we need to have, again, thinking about having antiquities law, it tells you how much that return of all these fossils meant to the Ethiopian government. They wanted to do something to regulate how things were being done, right? So there was a research hiatus in the country because of that for like almost 8 years or 9 years until they changed the regulations. But that is a hint that the government was actually giving emphasis to its paleoanthropological resources and how to store them and how to make sure that they're studied within the country. But when you look at the state of all these fossils that have been collected in the 1960s and 1970s and how they were stored, it's so sad. This is how they were stored, in big boxes, in crates, one fossil after another, like on top of each other, right? Or, you know, wooden shelves like what you're seeing on the lower slide. So this was really bad, and people can't even find specimens if they wanted to study them, right? So something was needed to be done, right? So this is the first lot, not the building in the background, just the front, the shack. That was built in 1984. This was built because famous archaeologist Desmond Clark and paleoanthropologist Clark Howell, they got some funding from National Science Foundation. And this was the first modern lab for the country, paleoanthropology lab. And all of the fossils that you saw in those crates, they were moved to this building. And then casting programs started. Alamo, who is the first casting expert for the paleoanthropology laboratory, was sent to Cleveland, Ohio, to be trained where Don was. And he was trained to do molding and casting. He went back, and that's when he started molding and casting these hominins, right? But then things changed in the 1990s because there were a lot more discoveries, right? So the government decided to build this fabulous building, paleoanthropology laboratory, equipped with all kinds of modern, you know, cabinets and hominin rooms with safes and so forth, right? So you go back in time and you see like what was happening in the 70s when Lucy was found, and come forward in the 90s, what was happening? So all of these events that happened in between, you never heard about them happening all in one. But when you put them all together, you see how much impact Lucy had on actually directing the paleoanthropology in Ethiopia. So the other thing is about local scholar participation. This is a photo that I borrowed from Don. This is a photo from 1974. And when you look at all the researchers, obviously you don't see a lot of local Ethiopian researchers. But that was because, one, there weren't trained Ethiopians to join the group. There weren't trained from other African parts that were able to join this group, right? So the lack of trained local manpower also another problem, which kind of made this research like exclusively done by foreign researchers. So that was what was the situation was. But think about today. How many Ethiopians there are who are really influential in this field, right? This is a product of about 20 years or so since the discovery of Lucy that actually led to the training, proper training of a lot of Ethiopians, some of whom you see here. Of course, I forgot somebody here. So all of this happened since the 1990s. And this is really a great progress that Ethiopia has made, particularly in paleoanthropology. But as I said, all of it started with the discovery of Lucy, with the discovery of the first family, which kind of triggered a lot of interest in the government also, and also in a lot of scientists who started flowing into Ethiopia to do survey and exploration and find other sites, right? And these are the Ethiopian scholars who've been publishing paper after paper after paper, which a lot of them you heard about, either referenced or naming new species. So this is really a huge success for paleoanthropology in Ethiopia. And as I said, you have to go back and think about why did this happen, right? So this is where Lucy comes to play, okay? And today I can tell you that we have so many Ethiopians who are graduate students, who are postdocs, right? It took a lot of time. And when you look at all these students, I gotta stress, Anne mentioned it a little bit earlier, almost all of these students are trained by funding from the Leakey Foundation. Leakey Foundation has a program called the Baldwin Fellowship. Most of these are Baldwin Fellows. And they now have started Frank Brown Fellowship, which is also supporting African students. So that's what we need to actually increase the number of active participants in the field. And this is something that is, you know, really that Ethiopia is proud of, because it has made a lot of progress in terms of utilizing the paleoanthropological resources that it has to make sure that there are good facilities and there are also well-trained Ethiopian paleoanthropologists. And I can tell you how proud the country is about Lucy. You may have seen a stamp that Don showed the other day, but this is also the motto of the tourism, Ethiopian tourism. And this was inspired by Lucy. And I remember Don, when he was in Ethiopia in January, he had a visit to the Minister of Tourism. And I believe she was explaining to you about the root, like what it is, and how she was proud that Lucy was found in Ethiopia. So it's the land of origins motto is basically because of Lucy, okay? But on the other hand, you would expect to have good institutions in Ethiopia that train paleoanthropologists of the future. But sadly, that's not what you see, right? And this is not a problem just for Ethiopia, but there are a few examples that I can give you. The Addis Ababa University started a master's program, okay? When they started that program in 2010, they did not have all the necessary faculty or instructors to actually run the program effectively. So basically, when Zerai and myself and others were going to Ethiopia during the summer, they asked us to teach courses, and that's what we were doing. But that's not how you run a project, a program like master's program. But the attempt is there, right? And because it suffers from the lack of adequate instructors required for the program, we need to think about, like, how can we, you know, mitigate those kinds of problems that they have if we can, you know, help them to be successful. But this is also the program that's helping a lot of Ethiopians to use as a stepping stone to come out for PhDs. Those are the students that I was talking about earlier who have Baldwin Fellowships and Frank Brown Fellowships. So that, in that way, it's really, really significant. So, and then this is about Ethiopia, because I have all of the data, right? Then I start thinking about, like, what was Lucy's impact outside Ethiopia, right? Now, I don't have a lot of data, but what I can tell you is, going back to my first slide, that it really encouraged a lot of survey and exploration work in almost all of the Eastern African countries. And you look at all the sites, except for South Africa, most of the Eastern African sites were found after Lucy was discovered. So that need for survey and exploration was really, really highlighted by the discovery of Lucy and her relatives. But then, yes, there are so many sites that we have found since the discovery of Lucy, and it kind of triggered, like, more interest in even finding the oldest, the older ancestor fossils. But what other programs do we have training African scholars in Eastern African countries? I can give you a few examples. There could be more, but the ones that I just found by going online, is this is one of the programs, the Turkana University College Master's Program, where they teach paleoanthropology, okay? But this also faces the same problems as the Ethiopian, the Addis Ababa University, okay? You can also think about, like, in Tanzania, which is also another country with a lot of paleoanthropological wealth, right? But they do have a program in archaeology master's. They do have a program in archaeology PhD. But they don't have a program in biological anthropology. But we know Tanzania has a lot of fossil sites that are really significant, like the earliest Australopithecus afarensis is from Tanzania, and things like that. So the key question here is, how can we actually mitigate some of this problem? Because moving forward in the 21st century, paleoanthropology has to be, one, inclusive, and two, move forward with new techniques and advances in our methodology. But that inclusivity has to be part of it. And the other thing that we haven't talked about is community engagement. Some of us do, but not all of us. And that's something that we also have to really think about. So when I think about moving forward, I'm not gonna say this is what we're gonna do. I'm gonna say I have questions, a lot of questions, right? First one is, what is our role as paleoanthropologists in terms of training African scholars? How have we been handling the training of local African collaborators so far? Collaborators means somebody who collaborates in a meaningful way, right? And how do we deal with the imbalance between the progress we make in science and the students we train from Africa? How can we include our African collaborators in our research in a meaningful way? How can we mitigate brain drain? This is something that we don't really think about that much, but it is really a problem, right? So for us as scientists, as paleoanthropologists, these are some of the questions that we need to really think about. And when you think about training local scholars, you got to also think about helping these African institutions develop their own programs like Addis Ababa University, University of Dar es Salaam, or the Turkana University College and so forth, right? So I think this is about time. LUCY 50th is a big event, and LUCY 50th should be used as the stepping stone to the next 50 years, right? The next 50 years have to be different, have to be like moving forward. We have to really think about those kinds of things, and obviously needs a lot of discussion among ourselves. So for this, we have co-organizer Curtis Marion and myself have planned on a mini workshop. Most of the speakers will be part of that. And whoever is interested can actually come and join us. It's gonna be here at IHO in the morning. But the last thing that I wanna do is the acknowledgements, which I'm gonna take my hat of a speaker and put my hat of co-organizer. Curtis Marion is a co-organizer of this symposium. And honestly, he's done a lot of the heavy lifting for the symposium, collecting all the abstracts from speakers to chasing down all the schedule and, you know, communicating with our staff to make that everything is run smoothly. So thank you very much, Curtis. And symposium speakers who have come from across the United States and also from Africa and from Europe, and the entire audience here and also online. This was really a fabulous symposium, and it just tells me that we need another LUCY 50 to do this again. And Job mentioned LUCY 75. That's only 25 years from here, from now. I'm gonna be 87, that's okay. I'll still be around. But this is something that we really learned from this symposium. It's really great because a lot of ideas came up, a lot of stories came up. So I'm really happy with the symposium, and thank you very much for all the speakers and also the participants. And I want to also thank IHO faculty, some of whom are panel discussants who are going to be up soon. But most importantly, I would like to also thank IHO staff who've done a lot of fabulous work getting all of the organization and logistics, without which we wouldn't have been here to talk about impact of LUCY. Thank you so much, and I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.